Hi, this is Dana Huber, Clarion graduate, and you are listening to episode 59 of Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
Oh yeah.
Bringing you authors of science fiction and fantasy, publishing industry analysis, writing tips, book reviews, and the occasional belly laugh.
World while you were gone.
Nice segue there, Sean.
It's Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
This is Hugo and Nebula Award-winning author Robert J. Sawyer.
And now, streaming from the Singularity Audio Studios in San Diego, California, your hosts. Welcome to another episode of Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, your podcast for science fiction and fantasy literature. I'm Sean Farrell.
And I'm Sam Wins.
Today's show is brought to you by Reading the Wind by Brenda Cooper and Bones Burnt Black by Stephen Ewan Cobb. Please visit our website to learn more about these science fiction thrillers or find them in your local bookstore. Today we are pleased to present the graduates of the Clarion Workshop. I spent some time with them on the final night here in San Diego. If you have ever considered attending a workshop, if you're an inspiring writer, if you're a working writer, or even if you have no desire to write, but you just love good books and you're interested in activities that involve groups of people and that are very intense and scrutinized, you need to listen to this one. Don't miss it. I think the graduates had some astounding things to say, and we will present... We will also present, let me mention this too, in this show, Publishing Key Number 5, brought to you by Kay Kenyon, and Key Number 4 appears in Episode 96 of I Should Be Writing, so make sure you're listening to that show for the other key. Okay, before we do all this, though, let's get some publishing news in. Sam, take it away.
Alrighty, I've got two comments. One, really briefly about the Clarion writers. They are awesome. I know a couple of the graduates.
Oh, they probably came into the store many a time.
Yeah, they come into the store, mm-hmm. And I know some graduates from last year. One of them's a friend of mine, Shweta, and she's actually being published in an anthology coming up by Terry Winling and Ellen Datlow, which they
Excellent.
Do really great fairy tales, you know, with the likes of like Neil Gaiman and Charles DeLint and... Anyways, so that'll be great, and I'm really
Charlie.
Happy for her. Yeah, every, but I just wanted to say, everyone I've met has been so intelligent and so interesting. Like you were saying, the viewpoint about the world around them. I just love talking to them because they just have such insightful things to say. So yes, listen to the rest of this episode. Okay, that's my two cents. And then on top of that, my disclaimer for the publishing news, because there are a lot of names that I've seen printed, mm-hmm. but have not actually heard pronounced. And so I will probably mangle their names. So I apologize.
No hate mail.
Yeah, to you whose names I mangle. And, I'm not perfect, though. You know, I pretend to be.
I have it on record. She said it.
No. Delete that, Sean. Delete it or die.
It's sticking around forever.
Okay. But the publishing news is very exciting indeed. They are the Hugo winners. Put in the cheering.
Okay.
So, Hugo winner for Best Novel, The Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon. Novella, All Seated on the Ground by Connie Willis. Novelette, The Merchant and the Alchemist Gate by Ted Chiang. Short story, Tideline by Elizabeth Baer. Related book, Brave New Worlds, The Oxford Dictionary of Science Fiction, Jeff Prucher. Dramatic presentation long form. Stardust, written by Jane Goldman and Matthew Vaughn, based on the novel by Neil Gaiman. Dramatic presentation short form, Doctor Who, Blink, written by Stephen Moffat. Editor short form, Gordon Van Gelder. Editor
Fantasy
long
form. And science fiction.
Thank you. Editor long form. All right, editor. Thank you for editing my editor.
You're
there.
Welcome.
Editor long form, David G. Hartwell.
Tor Books.
Professional artist, Stephanie Martinier.
Stefan.
I'm sorry, Stefan. You're right.
He's great. He does all the Kay Kenyon covers for her series of the Pyre,
which are gorgeous.
They are. He does Brenda Cooper's covers for her two books. He does a lot of them, and they're all.
I'm gonna have to. I don't often pay attention to artists. I mean, I'll sometimes you'll see a book and go, oh, this looks like this book. Oh, it's the same artist. And it's something I've actually, you know, note to self, pay more attention to artists. So yeah. I'm going to have to look up more of his work, because the Kay Kenyon covers I love.
Yeah. I've seen, I mean, ever since Bride of the Sky, which I really liked, I started looking around for him.
For his work.
And he does a lot of them, and they're all really good.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to have to go look him up. Yeah. Google him. Yeah. Sorry, Stefan, you and your crazy French name. For semi-prozine, back to the Hugos, for semi-prozine, Locus, Charles N. Brown, Kristen Gong Wong, and Liza Grone Tromby. For fanzine, File 770, Mike Glyer. For fan writer, John Scalzi. And for fan artist, Brad Foster. And now, it's not a Hugo, but it's also a very important word in science fiction and fantasy, the John W. Campbell Award for Best New Writer. And that is Mary Robinette Kowal.
All right, so Sam, have you read anything that's on this list?
You know, we had signed first editions of the Yiddish Policeman's Union, and it sold like hotcakes. And I've heard so many good things about Michael Chabon, but I'm sorry to say I have not read it yet. It is actually here at my house in, you know, my gigantic pile to mm-hmm. be read, because I heard such great things about it. And
is
obviously,
it in this pile or the one downstairs?
The one downstairs. The yeah, I have many piles. I had to buy new bookcases recently. That's how bad it is.
And they're full.
And they're all full already. Mm-hmm. So I will get to that, and I'm just... If I had predicted it was going to win the Hugo this year, I would have read it earlier,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've read Connie Willis's work. I have not read that novella. I've read a bunch of Elizabeth Baer, have not read that short story. But, you know, I'm a big fan of Neil Gaiman, and Stardust is one of my favorites by him. And I thought the movie was brilliant. It was a lot different than the book, but... Mm-hmm. A great interpretation. So
cool.
I totally agree with that there. And that's about it. Of course, we know John Scalzi. Love him. I read his work.
I'm reading him right now, actually.
Mm-hmm. Love his stuff. So,
well,
how about you, Sean?
I have Brave New Worlds, which is the related book, and it's really good. Very, you know, it's basically just a chronicles all the different terms in science fiction and kind of gives the major places they're used, you know, like cyberpunk.
Great.
Where it first came up and other different iterations of it.
Ooh, so I want to read that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's not something you'd really sit through and, well, some people might.
Yeah, cover to
Scalzi
cover.
Scalzi has a quote on there saying he did that.
Well, I read The Silmarillion cover to cover twice, so.
Okay, then you might, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. I like to sit down and just kind of flip through it and see what's in there. What else? Oh, well, Doctor Who. I'm not a Doctor Who fan, and I don't understand why Battlestar Galactica doesn't win this every year, just because I'm a huge Battlestar Galactica fan and believer in that show, and they just keep getting nominated, and I think they did win it once, but as far as I'm concerned, it should win every year.
I agree. This last half season I thought was incredible. They were back on task.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every episode was really, really excellent. So,
and I know the two shows have very different sensibilities, and that's why, right, I haven't been able to get into Doctor Who, because I always feel like it's a pulp thing.
It is. It's a little goofier, which I appreciate goofy, but I'm kind of in the same boat where I just haven't. I need to just force myself, because I know, I'm sure I would like it. So many people I respect love Doctor Who, but.
Right, I'm in the same boat.
I've only seen a couple, like, unrelated episodes, so I think I just need to sit down.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But Battlestar Galactica, God, how it's so
amazing.
Hard to compete with that.
And of course, Locus, I have a subscription to that.
Oh, of course.
And I really enjoy that magazine. I think they should just give it like an honorary Hugo every year, though, so someone else can win in that category.
Yeah, pretty much. It is
18 straight years or whatever.
Yeah, it is the premier, you know, science fiction magazine. Yeah, it really just is. It's good quality.
I think it's interesting that it's considered semi-professional. You know, I'm not sure what do they have to do to be professional.
Actually, that's a really good. It's kind of like the Olympics, you know, where you're pro or semi-pro, and if you're pro, you can't compete in the Olympics, but if you're semi-pro, you can. Like, the weird whole definition. I don't get it. I'm not really sure what the definition is. And same thing with the semi-pro magazine.
Yeah,
maybe
one of you guys
know, and you should let us know on the website.
Yeah, please. If someone can explain why Locus is considered semi-professional, we would love to hear it.
I'd like to know.
Well, that's going to do it for the news. Let's take a break, and we'll return to the graduates of the Clarion Workshop. And they do come in two different sessions. There'll be a little short break in between, and we'll see you on the other side. What if you got your heart's desire to fly a spaceship? What if you could go to the planet you've always dreamed of, where people like you came from, and where you were no longer considered a freak? My name is Joseph, and I got both of those dreams. Good dreams can turn to nightmares, and the future is not what we expect. On our approach to Silver's home, we were warned away. I had to find the resources to land safely, in spite of the fact I had never landed. The spaceport was closed, and the authorities might start shooting us as we defied them. And then I found a man in the ship's data, like myself, who could read the wind of data. And he had instructions to keep us from landing. Reading the Wind continues Brenda Cooper's saga of the Silver Ship. Visit the Five Worlds and return to Fremont. See what happens when multiple societies clash. Feel what it means to be human. Lose yourself in a story of suspense, love, and mind-blowing science fiction. Find Reading the Wind in bookstores everywhere and visit brenda-cooper.com to learn more about the novel and the author.
The show and our last Clarion special show, and I am now joined by half of the students, or I guess I should say graduates, of the workshop. So say hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
I should have known that was coming. Before we get into any questions, I want to do a name lap, and I'd like for you to say your name and where you're from so we get a sense of the diversity here. And to my left.
I'm Monica Byrne from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Allen. I'm originally from Germany, but I now live in Pittsburgh.
I'm E.J. Fisher. I'm from San Antonio, Texas.
I'm Paul Berger from New York.
I'm Emily Jung, and I live in the San Francisco Bay Area.
I'm Ferret, and I'm from Cleveland.
I am Daniel J. Pinney from Flagstaff, Arizona, for a little while longer. Only a little while longer.
I'm Lauren from Brooklyn.
I'm Keffy from Bellingham, Washington. Keffy Curly, and it's K-E-F-F-Y, not Kathy. Sorry.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. All right. I just want to start off by asking, what was harder about your experience here in the workshop than you expected?
Eating.
You'd think that would be something you've done for a while.
Not like this.
to go off of what EJ was saying, the food was at times challenging.
Euphemism. Our workshop term for the food is problematic.
And there's this adage of you are what you eat, correct? So therefore, you know, being at Clarion, it's intense. It requires a lot of brain power, and sometimes our brains perhaps were not nourished as we would like.
And the two-minute time limit that we had for critiquing actually was... Sometimes it was very hard to reach 2 minutes. Sometimes it was very, very hard to...
Maybe better explain that. 2 minute time limit?
Everybody critiques on every story. Mm-hmm. And so that we aren't there from 8:30 in the morning until like 4:30 in the afternoon, you know, there's a fixed time limit of you get 2 minutes to critique.
Oh, wow.
And so you either have to talk really fast or you have to... you know, learn to sort of condense your criticisms. And some of us, you know, I won't name names, but some of us are very verbose, and that kind of compression is difficult.
The other thing that was really difficult is when I first got the Clarion thing, I was going to work part-time at my job, and I was like, well, I just need to work like 5 hours a week. And they went, whoa, you can't do that. That's crazy. I'm like, well, why can't I work 5 hours a week? And I soon determined that basically... The way Clarion works is you get up at like 6:30, 7:30 to go to breakfast. Then you critique until 1:30. Then you write your ass off in the afternoon trying to get your story in for that week. Then you have to read 18 to 20,000 words worth of stuff every evening and reread it again so you can critique it again the next day in class. And then you go to bed like around, 1 o'clock? And then collect and do it again.
Well, Ferret's leaving out the evening activities as well. We usually had some sort of lecture or meeting or event that we would go to almost every night.
A week here feels like 3 weeks of non-Clarion.
Yeah. We have been living in dog years.
I think the hardest part for me actually was sometimes finding things to say about the stories that I didn't think everybody else was going to say, because when you have 18 people in a room and they all pretty much talk about the same problem your story has, it gets a little bit boring. I always try to find like the things I thought were really obviously wrong with the story just in case somebody missed them. And then one or two things that I thought were things that weren't as important, but that most people probably wouldn't have picked up on or thought about, like physics problems.
How many of you have been in workshops before? Not one this intense, probably, but just in workshops before. How does this compare to those?
Oh, I'm in a traditional MFA program, and I think the level of critique here is just as high, if not higher, at times than my traditional mainstream literary program that I have in California, which I still adore. I think the spectrum and the range of our workshop people is amazing in terms of life experience, in terms of what they're interested in terms of how they approach story. I just think we have a huge spectrum in all of these different axes, and it's been a wonderful learning experience. I really love you guys.
I've been in a writing group back in New York called Altered Fluid for probably the last 7 years now. And it's gotten to the order of 10 members, and about half our members are grads of either Clarion or Clarion West. So I had some idea what we could expect. I knew what the process for critiquing was. I knew how to workshop a story. It still did not prepare me for what I'm finding here. The caliber of people that I'm working with here in this group is just absolutely fantastic. They're seeing things in my stories that I never would have seen anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's just been a fantastic experience.
Yeah, I haven't workshopped before, but I would bring manuscripts here, and I'm like, oh, I'm sure I can get away with this. And then 18 people would go, no.
Yeah.
There is no getting away with.
I've been in academic creative writing workshops since I was an undergrad, which was some time ago. And this has been the best and most demanding and most unforgiving in a really good way workshop that I've ever been in, sort of like what Ferret's saying, but I've done a lot of these, and partly it's because it's Clarion and everybody here has been vetted, and none of us suck. We're all really good. And
yeah.
You know, good readers, good critics. And that you get so much out of a workshop, so much more out of a workshop experience when it's such a consistent grade of quality, both in critical judgment and, you know, writing talent, frankly.
I love that people are raising their hands. This makes me feel powerful. Yes.
I'm part of kind of two critique groups in Bellingham. One of them is called Bellingham Crits. The other one has a name that's not used in polite company, but we say DPS. I thought that we were really harsh on each other, and we are, but I wasn't used to getting things read ahead of time and critiqued, and reading something before you go to the workshop adds another level of depth to the critiques. There are things people get when they've been able to read it two or three times that they don't get when they just read it at the workshop, which is what I was used to. So Clarion was definitely a lot different for me in that respect.
Cool. Well, we talked about some of the challenges of it. Oh, did you want to add one?
Just briefly, I've been to the Tin House Writing Conference last year, which is a literary writing workshop, and the way that worked was that we handed in one manuscript ahead of time. The workshop lasted for 1 week, and we would basically go through the manuscripts in our group that had been handed in beforehand and critique those, and we didn't produce any new work there. And that's something that I found really amazing about Clarion, that we were not only critiquing each other's work, but we were also continuously producing new work all the time for 6 weeks, and that really, I had the feeling, helped me a lot as a writer.
Do you get the sense that you now really know what it's like to be a professional working writer, now that you've been here, maybe that you didn't before?
Yeah, more
better idea.
Yeah. I don't think it translates over exactly, but we do know what it's like to face six deadlines, one after the other,
right.
And just dedicate ourselves to getting the product out. When I write for my writing group at home, there's no deadline. You submit when you want to submit. You take as much time as you want to work on a story, and you're really comfortable with it, and you submit it. We didn't have that luxury. And you could tell, the first couple of weeks we were submitting stuff that was really polished. The last week or two, it was
discovery draft.
Yeah, and lots of gaps between paragraphs with sentences and brackets, like, insert amazing paragraph here.
And also, I mean, for me, I'm coming from an MFA program in academia, and at the very most, we submit one story a month, if that. You know, some people do one or two stories in 3 months. So the pace is pretty grueling, and in addition to that, you're critiquing and reading and absorbing and workshopping. So I don't think professional writers necessarily do all of that in a week, but it's really awesome to know that we can do what we can
do. If we have to.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing for me is I already known what a professional writer was like kind of from talking to them, but for me the interesting thing was submitting a manuscript and immediately having 18 talented writers, you know, and in this case one professional writer, going over and going, no, as an editor I would not buy this. This is completely BS. This is crazy. Your plot doesn't work. Your ending doesn't work. And it was amazing to have it taken apart in that kind of level of detail and still have people go, but you could work this into a good story. Mm-hmm. You know.
And just the, you know, the really stressful production environment, I think, is sort of fantastic training. I mean, I don't know that any of us feel like we know what it feels like to be professional writers yet, because we haven't gotten paid yet, for the most part. But one thing that all of the instructors have been telling us is one of the most important things to do if you want to be a writer professionally is to produce. Mm-hmm. And we have produced. Mm-hmm. And we have busted it out, and we have taken risks with stories that we didn't feel like were quite ready or weren't as polished, like Paul was saying.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, it's been a great experience. It's going to be awful when I go home, because I don't have the excuse anymore. Oh, I can't write this story right now. It's like, yeah, you can't. And that's awesome.
And the other awesome thing, which I want to add, is watching everybody evolve from week to week, because we've all got our A game on. We all want to do our best work, and people are challenging us, and people go, week one, you need to work on characterization. And week two, somebody comes up with something that focuses on characterization. We're watching each other evolve story by story, and that's amazing.
Yeah, actually, I think for me personally, people have a different opinion of what my story style is. I usually write very traditional linear stories, but this every week is a different experiment, because you ask your instructor, what do I need to work on next week? And they tell you, and you're like, okay, go for it. And so every week is a new a boundary to be explored, which is really exciting, and huge growth experiences.
I think the thing that made me more practiced as far as being a professional writer is if I just took the time every night I spent critiquing and realized that that was time out of my writing time that I was going to have to spend as a professional editing, submitting, dealing with what I submitted, finding out when the check's coming in. I think it did provide valuable experiences, especially on the writing on a fixed time scale.
So. Yeah, well, yeah, I was talking to an author, I'll leave him nameless, at Comic-Con, who for the rest of this year he has to turn in two novels, a novella, a short story, and about a dozen freelance articles, and he's only has 50,000 words done total. So thinking about how much work he has to do, and you know, this is all contracted stuff, and thinking about what you guys have done the last 6 weeks, that's training. So if you're ever in that, fortunate enough to have everyone wanting you like that, you'll be able to step up to the plate.
I wouldn't mind having those problems.
Challenges a little bit. What are some of the things that were easier than you expected? And I want you two ladies in particular to answer this because you've been quiet.
Everything was easier than I thought it would be, honestly. I expected coming here to just not be in touch with my family at all, to not be in touch with my partner at all, to struggle with every story, and it was all, I mean, after the first week was rough because I was staying up till 2 every morning because Kelly Link is so much damn fun. She would just, like, tell us stories, and she was fantastic, and I wanted to be around her all the time. But then at the end of that week, I was just completely wiped out and emotionally wrecked. And so from that point on, I decided I'm going to get at least 7 hours of sleep a night. It was such a good decision, because after that, I just always felt like my body was healthy and I was well rested enough and I could give everyone stories a fair chance and just manage my time such that I don't know, it was pretty easy experience, and I'm proud of everything I wrote, so.
Awesome.
I almost said pass there. We say when we're done critiquing in the workshop. So.
Extra 30 seconds.
Steffi?
Oh, yeah. I was really surprised that I was able to write one complete first draft of a short story per week. I would not have thought that I could pull it off. I don't know how I managed it. I think it was just the energy of the whole experience that provided this tremendous impetus to my writing. So that was really something where I was very skeptical in the beginning and where I'm now still amazed that it was possible.
And you're also a rock star. So,
you are, yeah. You know.
We love Recipe. For me, I was surprised how accessible our instructors were. Every year, I looked at Nick Clarion and went, who's teaching? And this year was like the year I was most excited about every single... Kelly, Jim, Marianne, Neil, Jeff, and Nalo. I was really excited about every one of these instructors and looking forward to getting to know them. And I thought, well, you know, maybe they wouldn't want to get to know me, you know? And but they've been so just available, you know, for us, and that's been wonderful. And just, you know, really open and willing to share their knowledge. It's been awesome.
Pass.
Yeah. I actually have to kind of second that one. I thought it was going to be really hard to... not be too shy to talk to the instructors and the other people, because sometimes I clam up, and everybody here was just really friendly and really ready to share what they knew about writing, share their writing, share their experiences. And so basically every single person here was really easy to talk to and really open, and it was really awesome. So I love everybody.
Also, another thing is, I mean, we all have, you know, left, you know, almost all of us, not Dana, but we've all mostly come really far from home. We've left behind our support networks to go do this really intense thing. And I think most of us at one time or another have been feeling kind of ragged. And I know a fear of mine coming in was that separated from my support network. If I started losing it, or if it felt like it was too overwhelming, I wasn't going to be able to, you know, have any recourse for that. But actually, it was sort of wonderful watching all of us come together in those times and be our support network for each other. I think we formed a really strong community over the past 6 weeks.
The thing about it is that, I mean, basically the instructors swap out from week to week, and what's left is us, and we really pulled together and we're very supportive to each other. You know, I love that. I mean, we've created a culture, and I've been missing my wife like hell for the past 6 weeks, but I know the minute I go home and I get her, I'm just going to start missing all of you guys. You know?
We'll be in touch, Barrett.
Well... Yeah, we all, I think, very quickly, and partly this was, you know, the first couple of weeks instructors and building community, because that's very, very important here.
Yeah.
We became each other's people. We've had each other's backs for 6 weeks, and yeah, I thought, you know, kind of like EJ, that this would be a whole lot harder for me than it turned out to be. We've all melted down, and... we've all had each other's backs when, you know, it's like, oh, you're melting down. Okay, let's go for a walk.
There's a party game called Mafia. Clarion groups traditionally play Mafia, and it involves basically turning on your neighbors.
Sociopathic behavior, yeah.
And Kelly turned to me during the first game and said, I've never seen any group so bad at Mafia before. And we were so uncomfortable with the idea of turning on each other that we asked to be excused and not have to play anymore.
Yeah, we did it once. We didn't like that game.
All right, we got a few minutes left here, and I want to know what advice you guys would give to writers who are thinking about applying for next year's group.
Oh, I know this one. Okay, I don't care what you think of your writing. I thought both the stories I submitted sucked. Turned out they didn't. So if you have ever considered applying for Clarion, Clarion West, if you're in Australia, Clarion South, just get the application in, and if you get in, you will not regret it.
Yeah. Get your writing out there, get it on time, listen to all those people who are telling you, you know, you should apply to this. I think you might get in.
Yeah.
They make more sense than you think they're making.
And for those of us who come out of an academic background, don't be ashamed of loving your genre fiction.
You know,
write what you love and send it in, and that's what'll get you in the door.
I have to confess, we have two sub stories, and one of mine for the application was not even a genre story, but
mine too.
You send in your best work, and they will respond. So, and make the deadline, because they are serious about the deadline.
And the other thing...
And if you make the deadline by 5 minutes, that's okay, too.
Remember to email for an invitation code before you need to get the deadline. Yeah. Because you have to get that before you can apply.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I will say is the one thing that I thought about is like, oh, I can't take 6 weeks out of my life. That's too crazy. That's whatever. You know what? It's going to be like some of the best 6 weeks you've had. I mean,
definitely.
I've been I've been blocked for like 10 years on my writing. I came here and people smashed me through like they were an icebreaker. It was amazing. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, one last question. We're going to go around the group. This is yes or no. All right, just yes or no question. You're not allowed to go to Clarion twice. But if you were, would you want to do it again?
No.
Yes.
Pass. Ask me in a week.
I know, this is not an easy question to answer right now when you're just finishing up.
Probably not.
It would completely depend on the faculty, on where I am.
That is not a yes or no. I knew someone would do that.
Yes.
Yes, if I felt like I still needed it, but I don't.
Oh. Once is enough, no.
Yes.
All right, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's get that second group in here.
Yay.
Stranded in space, spinning out of control, and on a collision course with the sun, the crew of the spacecraft Corvus is about to discover something that will shatter everything they hold dear, and call into question everyone they trust. Murder. From Stephen Ewan Cobb, Parsec Award-winning producer of the Future and You podcast, comes a science fiction thriller that will make you question everything. Find Bones Burnt Black at your favorite online retailer or at your local bookstore. And visit the author's website at stevecobb.com. Bones Burnt Black by Stephen Ewan Cobb. If space doesn't kill you, someone you trust will.
All right, we're back with our second group of graduates. Thank you all for allowing me to crash your last... Is it last night? You guys going home tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All
right. Don't talk about that.
Yeah. Sorry. I ruined it already. I want to start off by doing a name lap and get your full name and where you're from, and we'll start on my left.
I'm Mary Elizabeth Burroughs, and I'm from Oxford, Mississippi.
I'm Kathleen Howard, and I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I'm Daniel Walter, and I'm from Leicester in the United Kingdom.
I'm Sarah Miller, and I'm from Connecticut.
I'm Gray Linnea, and I'm from Eugene, Oregon.
I'm Darren Bush, and I'm from Sydney, Australia.
I'm Megan Koshigi, and I'm from San Mateo, California.
I'm Crystal Waters, and I'm from Florida, but I'm living in Atlanta.
I'm Dana Huber, and I'm a California native.
Australia. Wow.
Yeah.
You care?
I work as a kangaroo masseuse. But they were willing to give me time away from those lovely little kangaroos to come here to further the art of writing. It's not like that.
All right, I have already lost control of this. All right, well, I want to start you off with the same questions I asked the other group to start them off, which is, what was more difficult about Clarion than you expected?
It was so much harder work. They told me it was in San Diego when I was coming to America, and I thought, I live in this great city in the middle of England. I'm going to go to the beach.
Not so much.
And then I get here, and I have to read 50,000 words, like, a day. Literally. Because you have to read it all twice. And you have to write a story every week. And then you go into a room, and everyone tells you what's wrong with your story. It's like the opposite of the beach.
In a very loving and supportive manner, we tell you what's wrong with your story.
Yes,
sweetheart.
It still hurts.
I think one of the hardest things for me is realizing that you're going to have to push yourself if you come into it with the attitude that Clarion will make you into a good writer without realizing that you yourself still have to really, really want it and really push for it even while you're there, then you're not going to get anything out of it. It's perfectly possible to do Clarion and not get anything out of it. It's adjusting your own attitude.
I
think I had this theoretical construct of what it meant to push my edges, and then when I actually got to my edges and realized how painful my edges were, then it became very different.
When you say edges, so clarify, do you mean the bounds at which you're capable of working? Are you talking about your personal or in your writing?
Personally, I'm terrible at plot. I'm just not good at it, and so coming up against that over and over again, being told in front of my 17 friends, it would be nice if you added a plot. And then, you know, really spending a large amount of time and effort in being like, well, what does this mean? How do I learn this? How do I get better at this?
Okay, I cut you off.
Well, that's fine. But, you know, yeah, exactly that. The finding the place that you're absolutely the most uncomfortable and then making yourself step over that line. Like, I can write you a beautiful sentence from here until tomorrow, but you asked me to put something of myself on the page. My God, the week I did that, I didn't sleep for 3 days. And I was terrified of what everyone was going to think of me. It was fine, you know, but, like, if you come here, you have to be willing to just throw yourself into it.
Yeah.
And not only do you have to write the thing that you're possibly worst at writing, you don't have time to polish it. You've got a few days, you get it out there, and you put it raw on the table, and that's very difficult.
I think for me, the hardest thing was always the night before I got workshopped, because I'm one of those people who would write it and hand it in without looking at it about 3 hours before the deadline, and then I would spend the entire night thinking about all the things that I knew I was going to get critiqued on the next morning because I hadn't had time to fix them. And that was always kind of frustrating, but it was good to know that I did have a sense of, you know, what was going right in a story and what was going wrong. So
we have an intruder.
That's okay. He lives here.
You want to do another interview?
I'd love to talk, but no.
Well, this was, I thought, an intriguing question from before. I got some interesting responses. So, what was easier about your 6 weeks here than you expected?
I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised by how awesome everyone is.
I was
afraid we were going to get here and it was going to be like a reality show and we were going to have each other. And there would be drama, and there really hasn't been.
Yeah.
We've all been supportive, and everyone's been awesome.
And everyone is so talented in their own unique ways, and that has just been an absolute delight to be able to immerse myself in this group of just wildly talented people who all have such different strengths and who are so willing to share of themselves and be supportive of each other and just take care of each other throughout this process, and that has been wonderful.
That's a piece. I mean, for me, I'm in a writer's group at home, and it's really different to know that every story, I mean, I don't care how raw the stories are, every story is on a much higher level than anything I'm used to critiquing or interacting with. Like, it's been really nice to be around talented people and looking at their work constantly.
The standard was really high.
Yeah.
I thought the standard was much higher than I expected. Yeah. Well, on the average, yeah, it's very high.
Did any of you apply and just think, well, I know I'm not going to get in, but I'll just apply?
Yeah.
But all of you felt that way, almost.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I just started writing and was like, well, might as well try. Yeah. I went to an MFA program, actually, and I applied. Did not think I was going to get in because I thought maybe I'd pick up some bad habits in the MFA program. Like, perhaps I was too indulgent with characters and nothing happened. And so when I got in, I was very excited because of that. I was like, all right, maybe I still got some of that rawness in there and some of that delight in genre fun. So, yeah.
So it was not a genre-centered MFA program, I take it?
No. Most aren't.
The opposite, yes, yes. Well, I know you're just finishing up your time here, so this isn't the easiest time to answer this question, because no, you don't have any space yet. But how do you think that Clarion has changed you?
I'm a better writer.
Or even as...
I know I am a writer.
Oh.
And that's
great. That's
really
pretty deep.
Right? Yeah, I mean, that's been great. So everything else aside, like, it's going to take a while for me to sort out, you know, what I got from each individual instructor and what I got from the critiques and everything else. But
I know in my bones and in my blood that I'm a writer now, and that was worth the whole thing.
Yeah, I discovered that I actually like writing stories. I didn't know this before I came here.
Explain that.
Applied to Clarion on a lark because I read about it on Neil Gaiman's blog, and he said, oh, I'm teaching at this thing, you have 4 days left to apply. And I was like, oh, that might be kind of fun. So I wrote 2 stories and I sent them in. I didn't know that I really liked writing before, but being here has made me realize that I really enjoy trying to tell a story. I really enjoy looking at stories critically, and it's really interesting to me, so it's been fantastic.
And that was Megan. I'll put her email on the blog. All you aspiring writers can send her hate mail. Someone else. How's Clarion change you?
For me, it was just an increase in self-knowledge and knowing what I go to as a crutch, what I go to that I need to turn into more of a strength. And I mean, it's true that it is like boot camp for writers. And one of the things that it does, it breaks you down to your core elements. And it's a good thing to know what is there in you at base so that you can then work with it.
There's this weird way that I feel like, in some ways, my confidence and my ego have been undercut. Like, just, you know, really having to look at, like, wow, there is a flaw, and there's a flaw, and there's a flaw. And, I mean, that wasn't always the funnest part of Clarion for me, but I really know what I want to work on. I really know what direction I want to go in. Like, I feel like all the BS has been cleared away, and I'm honestly looking at my writing clearer than I ever have.
What it does is exactly that. It sort of, Clarion makes you go, you're not a writer in your head, or you're not a writer sort of intellectually. You realize that after no sleep, after not editing, after sort of dealing with, you know, terrible food sometimes, and being sick and vomiting, that when it gets down to it and you're writing a draft, that you're a writer, like, at your gut, you know, realize you can be a great storyteller just at your gut, and that's pretty awesome to learn when, you know, you have sentences that don't have, you know, have grammatical issues or something. It's pretty awesome to realize when, you know, all your peers are telling you that, so that's something you learn right off the bat.
And I realized, you know, what kind of stories I want to tell, because I saw a lot of other people doing really, really cool things, and I love those things, and I have absolutely no desire to do them. And I experimented a little bit during a couple of the weeks, and I've kind of figured out, you know, this is really what I'm happy writing, and this is what I want to continue working on. And I think that was a good thing, because I don't feel the need to try hard SF anymore, because I know I'm never going to want to write hard SF. Yeah. So.
And I finally wrote a cop story, which I've been afraid of doing for a long time. Yeah. And I realized, I never really thought about writing before, but I thought, I'm gonna try and write a novel, you know?
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yay. Very cool. You know, I know there's some people who don't submit their work because they're afraid of rejection, right? Mm-hmm. Well, being here and being critiqued every week, how challenging has it been to separate the critique of your work versus feeling it as a critique of you?
I don't think, for me at least, it hasn't been difficult at all. I think watching people in the workshop, people very much wanted to fix what was broken in the story. Mm-hmm. And there was I never got a sense that anyone was trying to fix what was broken in the person. You know, it was just very much, we respect your work and we're here to deal with that. And that was wonderful.
And I think any good workshop will have that. I mean, this was an amazing group of people. I can't speak for other Clarions because I've only done one, but, you know, it's a twofold thing. It's coming in with the right attitude of knowing it's not about you, it's about your story, and of knowing that the people in the group are giving you critique about your story. So you'd have to have a really bad group to have a bad vibe off of that. So.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, and not only are they giving you a critique of your story and focusing on the work, there's the sense that everyone wants you to make it better. Like, they're rooting for you, even as they're pointing out the flaws.
They're on your side.
Yeah. The thing this style of critiquing will do is when you've gone around 17 critiques and the instructor's critique, you'll have a lot of different points raised and a lot of different opinions on the same story, but the critique group will, 99 times out of 100, spot the key flaw in that story or the key area that you can improve it. And that's tremendously valuable information that you will not pick up if you read that story for yourself 1,000 times in a row.
Right.
There's even this little bit of a brainstorming quality to it, where it's like, you know, I was thinking about your story and the ending. If it went in this way, I mean, even getting a wrong inquiry around, well, what if your story went this way, is really useful, because then you have something to bounce off of and say, well, no, I don't want that, but I'm really excited about this. Or sometimes the group does come up with these really amazing ideas that really make the story sort of shine.
Yeah, and it's just, it's always seemed like such a supportive process of the writer and of the idea of writing. And that's kind of been a joy. Even when the story has failed colossally, you know, it's just always been like, we're here to help you, we're here to fix it, we're here to help you be the best writer that you can be.
Right. Have any of you had or sold any stories?
Yeah.
A few of us.
A few of us? Cool. Well, can you tell us some of the, I'm just curious, like what publications they were?
I sold a story to Apex Science Fiction Horror Digest, because I won the Apex Halloween competition. I think there were about 152 entries, so I won that. And I've got another short story which I'm actually supposed to be editing at the moment, because the editors sent me an email going, can you do this as soon as possible? And that's appearing in an anthology called Canterbury 2100. So yeah, so they're the only two though. And lots of rejections.
Very cool. Very cool.
I have 8 semi-professional sales, and I just won 3rd place in Writers of the Future.
Hey, I'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Oh, for the next year.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll see you next year.
Yeah.
I've sold stories to Electric Velocipede, which is one of my favourite zines. And I've had work produced on BBC Radio in the UK, and I've sold about 13 stories in all.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah, I didn't ask that the other group.
It'll be just like,
put you guys on the spot. let me check my time here.
Dan and Paul have both sold stories.
Yeah, Dan sold a lot of Strange Horizons.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for other people who are going to want to get into this shop for next year?
When you write about what delights you. Mm. If you're not having fun writing, then it's going to show up on the page. And people are going to be bored when they read your stuff. Like, if you're not having a ball of a time and interested in what you're doing, then I'm not going to. And no one who reads your manuscript is going to. So just stop that right now. Write about what you want. Don't try and be clever. Yeah. Don't come in saying, oh, I'm going to write this kick-ass story that's going to knock everyone's socks off and they're going to love it. Because they're not. no matter how good the story is, there is a flaw in it. And you're there to have it ripped apart. That's what people are there to do. If you're in Clarion, your writing is at a level where odds are, making a generalization here, every workshop you've been in before now, you have been one of the best people in the workshop. So you're used to coasting. You're used to thinking, I can wow the socks off of everybody with a half-assed effort. You cannot do that at Clarion. And you shouldn't try, because you'll be disappointed. Come in there prepared to fail. Come in there prepared to write something that is not trendy and special, but that is an honest story from your heart, and you will be surprised and rewarded at the reaction. So,
I think the biggest advice I have for anybody who's writing is never stop writing. Like, write every day, write and write and write. That's the only way that you'll improve, that's the only way you'll learn. And you need people to, as Dana says, rip up your writing, and then you need to write more.
Find something that pushes you. And then push one more step.
I think coming into Clarion with a goal and an idea of what you want to get out of it as well. Some people in this year's group have come and developed a very clear voice in the work that they're doing and have taken that through one story after another. Some people have been through 4 or 5 different genres in each story. trying to find out what they want to write.
4 genres within a story?
It's okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Anyone else?
I would actually contradict that a little bit. I would say don't have a really definite idea of how things are going to go before you come in.
Because you're wrong.
You're going to learn things you're not expecting to learn. You're going to find that the way you thought you worked does not actually work when you have 2 hours of sleep and you need to get a story in by 5. You're going to find out a lot of things you didn't actually know, so it's better to just go in with an open mind and be ready to deal with whatever happens.
Yeah, I agree.
Come with a goal and be prepared to abandon it.
Yeah.
Just come and work hard.
Yeah.
Just come prepared to work hard and not get much sleep. And if you can do that, you'll have no dramas.
Yeah. Now, according to Jim, when he was on a few weeks ago, said that you can't come to Clarion twice. He did it because back in the day, you said you could do that. But if you could go to Clarion again, would you? And we're going to go around the group, yes or no. Or yes or no from everyone. And I know you don't get to explain. So let's start on my left.
Yeah, I'd come again.
Yes.
Yes, I would.
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely yes.
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 How about that? All right, guys, is there anything else you wanted to add about your experience here that you really want to mention I didn't bring up?
I like America. And I'm really glad I love your country. That's all I said for 2 weeks. And I'm really glad I came into the American Clarion and not Clarion South. And I don't know when I'm allowed to say that. Well, I don't know if this will give me trouble. But yeah, it's been great.
When you get here, be prepared to take care of each other. Because that's what will make sure that you get the most out of the experience.
Being a group, being a family. It sounds cliche, but it's very true. And some advice for people who, like, may apply to Clarion and not get in. So what? Write every single day, because when you get here, what you're going to be told is to do that anyway. So you don't need to go to Clarion to hear that. You can do that. Write every single day.
Yeah.
Make a schedule, stick to it.
Well, guys, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that wraps up our final episode in the Clarion series, and we do have more show, though, so stick around. I'm still recording.
This is Kay Kenyon, author of Bride of the Sky and A World Too Near, here to present Publishing Key Number 5, Getting Feedback on Drafts. Okay. You started writing your story, and you've got a stack of newborn pages at your side. You wonder, don't you, if a story will connect with another human being. You're not sure it's good or even interesting. Time to ask someone, right? Well, no. I say, do the first revision yourself so that you're not saddling your friends or acquaintances with a bunch of pages crying out for pruning and shaping. You should be learning how to master the revision process. It can be learned. It's an important part of your craft. Sometimes we seek early reactions from others because we need encouragement. The hunger for validation is universal among writers. A cheering squad can boost your confidence and make you feel better, but it won't improve your manuscript. So try to put the brakes on your performance anxiety and avoid showing early drafts around. A related problem arises with feedback on novels. Writers often share the opening pages of a work in progress. I have no idea, other than the hope for validation, why anyone does this. The beginning chapters of a novel comprise too small a view for productive feedback. So even with your novel, I recommend finishing the first draft, or at least a big chunk of it, and applying your skills at revision. Then it's time to get feedback. The best way is to find someone at the highest level of skill you can reasonably ask and see if they'll read the manuscript. You may know a published writer, or a published writer is an acquaintance of a friend. It doesn't hurt to ask, as long as you're gracious about it and have some connection to the author. Be prepared for some unsparing criticism. An experienced author will hit you hard on things like structure, pacing, and logic. They may be mercilessly objective about those characters you love so well. Their criticism may leave you feeling just the teensiest bit inadequate. Great. That's just what we're looking for. Someone who will give you honest reaction to your story. They might be wrong, but at this level of critique, you really want to pay attention. Are writers' groups the answer? I'm leery of them. Members can be dead wrong. They may wish you had written a different story, the one they would have written. Even worse, they're often too nice, depriving you of the tough insight you crave. However, if you're lucky enough to find a talented and objective group, that's great. But don't let the group devolve into discussions of your manuscript. This is a waste of time. You're there to hear a specific reader's feedback on your story, not to reach consensus. Sadly, I have to tell you that there is no consensus. It's up to you to weigh opinions that, even if unanimous, can be wrong for your story. Despite all this, I think it's helpful to get feedback. Every writer has blind spots, and a fresh viewpoint can be quite helpful. Here's how I do it. By the way, I give tips like this in my writing e-newsletter that you can find on my website. Now, this is a system I use when writing on deadline, and that gives me time to incorporate feedback and still turn in a novel a year. Many thanks to David Brin for this idea. I find a number of readers whose judgment I trust and who I think will be objective. In other words, not close friends. They might be writers themselves or passionate readers with an analytical bent. I ask them to separately give me tough feedback on the first three quarters of a manuscript that I've revised for structure, dialogue, and character, and lightly revised for style. While they're reading the partial, I go on to finish writing the manuscript. Then when I'm ready to take another pass through the story for revisions, I have my critiquer's comments on hand. I consider what they have to say. If it strikes a chord with me, I may change some things. Notice that I said, if it strikes a chord. Whatever feedback you use, listen well, but skeptically. As a writer, it is your painful duty and high privilege to make critical judgments about your writing. It's your story, there is no consensus, and you can't escape your responsibility to write the darn thing. Feedback can be helpful, but you get to decide.
My thanks again to the Clarion students for their kindness and for making me feel like I was at home among them. You know, I wasn't one of them,
cheesy,
but they made me feel like it. They did. It was very nice. I even got to wear the Burger King crown. And no, I don't really feel like explaining what that means. But they know what I'm talking about. That's all that matters.
Is that some sort of code word for piercing down below?
Uh-oh, the secret is out.
I think we've made that up just now. That's what I'm going to start calling it.
It is now. I totally lost what I'm going to say.
Sorry, I distracted him.
My thanks also to Tanya for making the interviews possible, and I hope we can do it again next year. It looks like we probably will. If you want to learn more about Clarion, please visit clarion.ucsd.edu. I'll put the link on the website as well. So let's get to some feedback.
Alrighty, Charles writes about our news story from episode 58. He says, from what I know, Wizards is currently focusing on its quote-unquote core brands, which is why the Discoveries line is getting the shaft. I don't have any inside information, but I also think it's too soon to tell whether the books are churning out a profit or not, as it's less than a year since the books were released, and I expect it takes a publisher around 9 to 12 months before they can evaluate on whether a book has had good sales or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally agreed there, yep. Charles.
Yep.
And he continues, on the side of good news, according to Steve Tem, the mass market versions of the release books will still push through. Yay! And thank you, Steve Tem, for posting that. Also, in Dragonhearth, it's been announced that the third Dragonlance novel will be published by Wizards of the Coast in 2009. That is really exciting, because as you guys know, I was a little pissed, shall I say.
You were.
I was. I was a Dragonlance fan. You know, I grew up with it, and I was like, what's going on with this? That they weren't, you know, Tracy and Margaret possibly weren't going to finish the third one or hadn't heard from Wizards. So yeah. I'm really happy that this has been resolved. And yay. Yay, Tracy and Margaret. Okay, we'll put the links for both Steve Tem's piece and Dragonhearth in the show notes.
Yeah, excellent email, Charles, and thank you for that. Hopefully, they'll discover that the books did do well. So even though they may not bring back another imprint, you know, I think having more imprints is always a good thing.
Absolutely. More variety. It's the spice of life.
And in science fiction and fantasy is just one of those things where if one author sells, it's really not stealing from someone else. You know, one person's doing well, it's good for everyone because it gets people reading.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And, you know, he's right. I doubt they have enough evidence to make a decision about if the book sold well or not. But I was sad that it got...
Yeah.
Act so quickly.
Well, which is why it really boggles my mind that they did it so quickly. And maybe just the sales were, you know, horrible, were miserable. And they were like, you know, we are losing so much money over this. We've got to cut it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have insider information on that. But still, you'd think you'd wait to really, really see how it goes with a new imprint like that.
Hey, if someone does have insider information, give us a call or drop us an email.
I know. Look at us. No information for
desperate.
You today. Hey, listeners, inform us.
Because the internet is failing us as far as this goes. Probably it's a corporate thing, though. Just happens.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap this up, I do want to make one quick announcement. As of this week, I am the newest writer for GateWorld.net, the web's premier website for all things Stargate. And I've been a fan of the website for years now, so I'm really excited to be joining the team over there. And you can read my first article. It's on the homepage of GateWorld.net in the news section, and it features content from my interviews with Ben Browder and Michael Shanks that I did at the red carpet premiere on the USS Midway. It's received really great feedback so far. I've been really excited. And hopefully, I'll have pretty much a weekly story on the site. So make sure you check it out. And if you care at all about Stargate, you really have to check it out. Because that's your place for Stargate, people. Okay, let's wrap this up.
You can email us at adventuresinscifipublishing@gmail.com or give us a call at 206-350-5029, and you can visit our website at adventuresinscifipublishing.com.
The Keys to Publishing contest will be ending soon, so listen to I Should Be Writing for that final key, and make sure to email all six keys to me. There will be no more keys in this show, so you need to make sure you're getting them from I Should Be Writing. You should be listening to that show anyway. And email all of them to us at adventuresinscifipublishing@gmail.com. We have books to give away, and it's a first-come, first-served thing, so don't miss out. Free books? Come on! Free books! Most of them are hardcover! What else do we have to do?
That's a beautiful thing.
Isn't it? Ooh, and the Brenda Cooper ones are signed. I think I mentioned that last week.
Yeah.
So, we'll see you very soon with our coverage from Comic-Con. That'll start coming out next week. Oh, and wish me well as I drive to LA this week to cover Writers of the Future. Thanks for listening, and until next time,
keep reading.
Music for Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing by Cargo Cult from their song Dirt. You can learn more about them at magnatune.com. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to a Singularity Audio production. To learn more, please visit www.singularityaudio.com.